I think it can be established with very little doubt that animals and plants have not evolved. The fossil record is very clear in that respect. We have in the fossil record, rather than a series of intermediate forms or transitional types showing that one creature has evolved into another, which of course the theory of evolution would require, rather than that sort of a record, what we have in the fossil record is each type, each basic type of plant and animal appears abruptly fully formed. For example, fishes suddenly appear in the fossil record. Every major kind of fish that we know anything about appears fully formed right at the start. There's not a trace of an ancestor for any of these fishes, even though evolutionists believe it took 100 million years for fishes to evolve from some invertebrate, such as a clam or a snail or something like that. So I think the fossil record is very clear in revealing the fact that evolution has not taken place on this planet, but each kind has appeared fully formed, just as we would expect on the basis of creation. But of course, we're all very interested in the origin of our own species, Homo sapiens, that's you and me. And of course, from time to time, we are exposed to some sensational announcement. Some piece of a skull or a tooth or something like that has been discovered. An evolutionist claimed that this is really tremendous evidence for evolution. And we see these highly imaginative transitional forms that are published in our magazines and on television and so forth and so on. So we're all interested in that sort of thing. We want to know more about that. Is there really evidence? Is there real evidence that people have evolved from apes? We want to critically examine some of that evidence today. Now, where do evolutionists believe that we came from? That is, the primates. You see, we are classified as primates. That is, apes, and monkeys, and lemur-like creatures, and people are all put in the order primates. Now, there are 32 orders of mammals. You know, there's the rodents, and then there's the flying mammals, or bats, and there's the marine mammals, or whales and dolphins and things like that, and then the hoofed animals and various kinds of creatures. 32 orders of mammals, every one of which appears in the fossil record with their basic characteristics complete right at the start. Now, you and I, we are placed in the order primates, along with monkeys and apes and these so-called prosimians. Why are we put in this order? Well, we share certain characteristics in common with these other primates. We all have grasping hands. Monkeys and apes and people have grasping hands. We have a relatively poor sense of smell, but we have keen eyesight and keen hearing. And all primates have relatively large brains. Of course, the brain of man is at least 3 times as large as the brain of any ape. Now, these are characteristics we share in common with these other creatures. So we have been put together, classified with these other creatures as primates. Now, evolutionists believe that primates came from insectivores, as we see on the chart. And the insectivores today include moles, hedgehogs, and tree shrews. More particularly, evolutionists believe that the first primates came from tree shrews. This idea was generated by a famous British anthropologist, Sir Wilfrid LaGrosse Clark. LaGrosse Clark went down to Asia and he studied the tree shrews and he studied primates, and he believed that he had seen or detected similarities between the tree shrews and primates. So he says the primates had evolved from tree shrews, and this became widely accepted, and it is still rather generally accepted today. Now, these early primates, which supposedly evolved from the tree shrews, evolutionists believe eventually evolved into monkeys. Then the monkeys, of course, evolved into apes, evolutionists believe, and apes evolved into people. Now, if that's true, what we must find is the existence in the fossil record of the transitional forms or intermediate types. that would show, it actually demonstrate by the fossils that we could actually discover and handle today, that a tree shrew had changed into a primate or a lemur-like creature. And then we should find transitional forms showing that a lemur-like creature or tarsier or something like this had evolved into monkeys. And then we should find intermediate forms showing monkeys changing into apes and apes changing into people. Certainly, that is what the Darwinian notion of evolution would require. Now we want to look at that sort of evidence, the idea that we came from a tree shrew, that is a tree shrew, evolved into primates, and then we went on up the line through monkeys, apes, and people. Now here we see a picture of a tree shrew. Now according to evolutionists, perhaps that's what you look like about 70 million years ago, that is, your ancestors. And then, about 20 million years later, or about 50 million years ago, according to evolutionists, perhaps we look like this lemur. The lemur is a primate. Or perhaps we look like this Philippine tarsier. Well, that wouldn't be too bad. He's kind of a cute little fellow. Notice his keen eyesight, and his keen hearing. Notice his grasping hands, you see. These are characteristics of primates. Or perhaps we look like the slender loris about 50 million years ago. Kind of a cute little fellow also, isn't he? And he shows those characteristics of primates. Now, I mentioned that we ought to find intermediate forms. We ought to find some fossil that shows the transitional stages between a tree shrew and one of these creatures. One of these creatures believed to be the first primate, if evolution is true. Dr. A.J. Kelso is an evolutionist and a physical anthropologist. He published a book called Physical Anthropology, and I'm referring to the second edition, published in 1974, about 15 years ago. But you know, that's almost a blink of an eye as it comes to the fossil record. Let's see what Dr. Kelso has to say about the origin of these primates. What he says is this, and this is on page 142 of that book. He says, the transition from insectivore to primate is not documented by fossils. The basis of knowledge about the transition is by inference from living forms. Notice what he says. We don't have any fossil record. We have no intermediate between a tree shrew or insectivore and the primate. We infer that primates evolved from the tree shrews or the insectivores by studying living tree shrews and living primates. Now, we don't have any hard evidence. We don't have any physical evidence. There is no fossil record to show that one evolved into the other. But what about this notion that there are similarities between the tree shrews and the primates to show that primates probably did come from tree shrews? Well, recent research has shown that LaGrosse-Clark was simply wrong. An article published way back in 1966 by Dr. C.B.G. Camel. That's in Science, July 22nd, 1966. Dr. Camel related the fact that recent studies, recent research, has shown that there is no close relationship between the primates and tree shrews at all. Later on, Dr. R.D. Martin published an article in Natural History, August of 1982. Dr. Martin studied the maternal behavior of tree shrews and primates, and he reasoned that if they were related, if one had come from the other, that the maternal behavior of primates and tree shrews would be similar. But he found out they were drastically different. The primate mother spends a great deal of time with her babies, but that's not the case of the tree shrew mother. She visits the nest only once every 48 hours. She spends 10 minutes nursing her baby, then she leaves the nest and doesn't come back for another 48 hours. Very, very different from the primates. Furthermore, Dr. Martin mentioned the fact that other research had shown that there's no relationship between tree shrews and the primates. And he says this, the consensus now is that tree shrews are not relatives of the primates. Now, you see, we have no evidence then in the world of the present that there's a relationship between primates and anything else. And there's certainly no evidence from the world of the past, that is from the fossil record, that primates are related to anything else. You see, what we have here is what we have throughout the fossil record. Primates stand separate and distinct from all other animals. There's no connection whatsoever here, as evolution would demand. And we'll see that within the order primates, these creatures are not related one to the other. Now, evolutionists believe, for example, that one of these lemur-like creatures, or a tarsier, evolved into monkeys. Now, there are two basic types of monkeys. There are the old world monkeys. They're the narrow-nosed monkeys. And then we have the new world monkeys, those found in South America and in Central America, and whose fossils are found in North America. These are the broad-nosed monkeys. Now, evolutionists believe that these creatures had separate origins. They did not evolve together. There was a split, and they each evolved separately. Now, in this picture, we see one of the new world monkeys, the red-backed squirrel monkey of Costa Rica. Of course, there's many other different types of these new world monkeys here in Central and South America. What does Dr. Kelso have to say about the origin of the new world monkeys? Well, we see that on page 150 of his book, he has this to say about the new world monkeys. Notice what he says. The details of the evolutionary background of the new world monkeys, the Platyrrhini, would doubtless be informative and interesting, but unfortunately, we know very little about them. Well, very little indeed. We know nothing about them. When we first find a monkey in the new world, he's a monkey. No transitional form, no indication that he came from anything else. What about the old world monkey? Well, here we see the pigtail macaque of Burma. Then we see the Jimmy Durante of the monkey world, the proboscis monkey, very aptly named. This is from East Borneo. These are just two examples of the many different kinds of monkeys found in the old world. Well, that is in Africa and Asia and places like that. Now, what does Dr. Kelso have to say about the origin of the old world monkeys? Do we have some links? Well, let's see what he has to say. He says this. This is on page 151 of his book. He says, clearly, the fossil documentation of the emergence of the old world monkeys could provide key insights into the general evolutionary picture of the primate. But in fact, this record simply does not exist. So we see again, monkeys just suddenly appear as monkeys in the old world. There are no links, you see, as the theory of evolution would require. But just as creation would suggest, these different kinds of creatures appear fully formed with no intermediates of any kind. Now, of course, evolutionists believe that monkeys evolved into apes. Well, here we see one of the apes. This is a small ape, a gibbon. A gibbon spends most of his time in the trees, and he swings from branch to branch. He has very long arms and short legs. He's what we call a brachiator. Now, when he does get down on the ground, he walks habitually upright, the only ape that does so. But that's very uncomfortable, very difficult. You see, he does not have the human anatomy. He's not made to walk upright. And so he spends very little time down on the ground. He is a quadruped. All apes are quadruped. We are biped. Apes are quadruped. In addition to the gibbon, we have the knuckle walkers. This is the chimpanzee. And then we have the gorillas. They lean forward, you see, on their knuckles as they walk. That's what they do habitually. Now, they can walk upright. Of course they can. Many animals can walk upright, but they're not made to do that. They are quadrupeds. Later on, we'll see the orangutan, another one of our modern apes. Now, each one of these apes, the apes appear fully formed as well. You see, there's no transitional form, showing that some monkey has evolved into the ape. And then we ought to have many of those fossils, and yet we have none What we see here among the primates is what we see throughout the fossil record. Discontinuity, not continuity. Not one group gradually coming from another, you see, as evolution would require. But each group appears separate and distinct with no links to any other group. Now, of course, we're mainly interested in our own origins, the origin of man. Now, evolutionists believe millions of years ago, and you know they're not sure just how many millions of years ago. Some say 20 million years ago, some say 15, some may say as much as 30 million years ago, some say 4 or 5 million years ago. But in any case, evolutionists believe that some millions of years ago, there was a common ancestor of ape and man. And this large population of these creatures existed at some millions of years ago, and then a few of these creatures became isolated somewhere out on the periphery, isolated from the general population. And they began an independent evolutionary line that led down to modern apes. Then some of these same creatures got over here somewhere else, became isolated, and they evolved all the way down to people. Isn't that strange? We start with the same creature. In one case, we end up with modern apes. The other case, we end up with people. But that is what evolutionists believe. Now, once the split took place, once this line began its evolution towards man, all of those creatures in that evolutionary line would be placed in the family of man by evolutionists. That is, they'd be placed in the hominidae, the family of man. They are called hominids. Now, of course, if evolution is true, there would be hundreds of stages, intermediate stages, as this ape-like creature gradually evolved into humans. Many hundreds of intermediate stages. Evolutionists, of course, are looking for fossils of those intermediate stages. They're still looking, by the way, for the fossils of that hypothetical common ancestor. They have never found that common ancestor, strictly hypothetical, but they believe that he must have existed. Now, we want to take a look at some of that evidence related to the suggested intermediate from the ape to man. The ape, of course, would have to gradually become erect. His brain would gradually enlarge, and the teeth, jaws, and face would change structure and so forth and so on as the ape gradually evolved into people. Now, we see that one of the first suggested ancestors along this line is Ramapithecus. This is a creature whose fossils were found in India for the first time. Evolutionists date this creature as late as 13 million years ago down to about 10 million years ago. That's their guesstimate, you understand. Then the next suggested possible ancestor is Australopithecus. That creature is now believed to have existed on the Earth, that is, by evolutionists, using their guesstimates and their dating methods and all their assumptions. They believe that he came into existence, that is, they find his fossils, dated around 4 million years ago to as recently as 1 million years ago. Then the next possible suggested ancestor for humans is a creature called Homo erectus, including Java man and Peking man. Now, originally, Java man and Peking man were placed not only in different species, but in different genera. Today, they are lumped together not only in the same genus, but in the same species by evolutionists. And they have renamed these creatures Homo erectus. And they believe that these creatures existed, maybe as early as 1.6 million years ago down to about a million years ago, or a half a million years ago. Then the next possible suggested ancestor is Homo sapien himself. And beginning with the Neanderthal people, the Cro-Magnon people, and then, of course, the modern people, that's you and I. And this is sort of the suggested family tree that they have so far. We want to take a look at the evidence related, first of all, to Ramapithecus, and then to Australopithecus, and then the Java man, Peking man, and finally the Neanderthal man, and our own modern times. Now, here we see the upper jaw or palate of an ape. Notice that the teeth are arranged in the form of a U. That is, the teeth row makes a U. Notice the front teeth, the incisors, are very large. Notice the very large canine teeth and the gap between the canine and the incisors. Each jaw must have a gap, you see, for the very large canine tooth from the other jaw to fit into that gap. That is quite typical of the ape. Now, in this next slide, we see on the right the palate that is typical of man. Notice that the teeth are in the shape of a parabola, not in a U shape, but in the shape of a parabola. Notice that the incisors and canine teeth do not project beyond the cheek teeth. Now, that's quite typical of man. In the middle, you see again the typical shape of the ape's jaw, the U shape of the ape's jaw, and behind it, that is typical of man, to contrast the ape to that of man. On the left, you see a early reconstruction of Rhomopithecus. This is back in the 1960s by Elwin Simons and David Pilbeam, well-known anthropologists of that time. Now, these two anthropologists, evolutionists, recognized the fact that the teeth of Rhomopithecus were quite typical of the ape, but they believed that they were somewhat smaller than we expect for a modern ape. And so they claimed that this creature, based upon that evidence, was on its way to becoming people. And you notice how they arranged the pieces, the few teeth, few fragments of a jaw, they arranged them in the shape of a parabola. And they said, now look at that. Compare that to man. Notice that the shape is similar, but quite unlike that of the ape. So obviously, they said, this creature was on its way to becoming people. And fact is, I heard Dr. David Pilbeam lecture, and he claimed that this creature walked upright. And I looked at those few teeth and fragments of a jaw, and I wondered, how in the world would he know that from just a few teeth and few fragments of a jaw? This is the picture I took in the San Diego Museum of Man about 15 years ago. This was their idea. This was their reconstruction of Rhomopithecus. Well, I'd have to say he wasn't an ape, and he wasn't man, so he must be somewhere in between, you see, according to this reconstruction. That was the picture they believed Rhomopithecus looked like about 15 years ago, based upon these speculations of these evolutionists. Well, a few years later, they found more complete material. They found the material of a complete jaw, and they found some facial bones and some other material from this creature. This is a reconstruction based upon that more complete material. This is a reconstruction by Alan Walker and Peter Andrews, published in Nature in 1973. Now we see something that is very typical of the ape. The teeth are in the shape of a U. We see the large incisors and the large canine teeth and the gap that is very typical of the ape. And based upon this material and the material they found from the face and from some from the postcranial skeleton, they have now concluded that he was an ape. He was an orangutan, essentially a modern orangutan. Alan Walker stated that the modern orangutan, in his view, is a living fossil. Because, you see, he believes the modern orangutan is essentially the same as the fossil that they had found, which they claimed to be 17 million years old. What did Rhomopithecus really look like? Well, that's what he looked like. That's an orangutan. That's what he really looked like. You see, not that creature that they had mounted in the San Diego Museum of Man. So what do we do with Rhomopithecus? Kick him out of the family tree of man. He doesn't belong there at all. He's just simply a modern ape. Well, what about the next creature, the Australopithecus? Well, we call them Australopithecines. Well, here's Dr. Raymond Dark holding the skull that was found in South Africa in 1924. We see the actual fossil skull. Now, this is very typical of the ape. This is of a baby ape, very typical of a baby ape. But Dr. Dart claimed that the teeth were somewhat manlike, and he claimed the creature was on its way to becoming people. Now, most evolutionists rejected these conclusions at that time, but as the years went by, more and more evolutionists gradually accepted the idea that these creatures were intermediate between ape and man. Later on, other fossils were found in East Africa and other places around Africa. In the lower portion, we see the skull discovered by Dr. Louis Leakey and his wife Mary in Tanzania in 1959. And they claim that this creature was very importantly related to the evolution of man. He's given the name Zinjanthropus, meaning East Africa man. Later on, they conceded that he was just essentially another Australopithecine. We see that they're very ape-like. We see the sagittal crest, the bony ridge across the top of the skull. That's very typical of the ape. We see that it has no forehead, very flat head, and massive eyebrow ridges and other characteristics that are typical of the ape. But it was claimed that these creatures were on their way to becoming Homo sapiens. Later on, Donald Johanson, American paleontologist, found a series of similar type fossils in Ethiopia. He called them Australopithecus afarensis. One of these fossils was of a female, about 40% complete, and he called her Lucy. And he became world famous almost overnight for his discovery of Lucy, because he claimed that while Lucy was essentially ape from the neck up, she walked upright, just like you and me. So, you see, would constitute an intermediate form. The first change that took place, supposedly then, was a change from quadrupedal locomotion to bipedal locomotion. Now here we see a reconstruction of the skull of Lucy. And when they reconstructed the skull, they said it looked like a small female gorilla. But nevertheless, you see, they claimed that these creatures walked upright in the human manner. Now, that is the conclusion. The consensus of evolutionists today is that these creatures, although they were quite ape-like, nevertheless, they were evolving into people. That is the consensus. We see that in our textbooks. We see it in National Geographic magazine. We see it on television. We read about it all the time. That is what most evolutionists believe. But that is not what all evolutionists believe. Lord Zuckerman, that is Dr. Solly Zuckerman, very famous British anatomist, head of the Department of Anatomy at the University of Birmingham for many years, a man who was first knighted, became Sir Solly Zuckerman, then was raised to the peerage. Lord Zuckerman, this famous anatomist, had studied these fossils for many years. As a matter of fact, he had a scientific team that rarely numbered less than four that studied these creatures for 15 years. Lord Zuckerman and his scientific team applied the most sophisticated methods of analysis available. And they had no inclination, you see, towards the creationist point of view. But Lord Zuckerman's conclusion, after these many years of research, was that these creatures were not intermediate between ape and man. They did not walk upright in the human manner. One of his former students, Dr. Charles Oxnard, for years, professor of anatomy, University of Southern California Medical School, now professor of anatomy and human biology at the University of Western Australia. This scientist has applied the very best methods of analysis available, the best tools available in anatomy to studying these creatures. And he has concluded, as similar to Lord Zuckerman, that these creatures did not walk upright. They are not intermediate between ape and man, and they are not man's ancestors. Now, I believe these scientists have done the very best research on these creatures. Their conclusion is very different, you see, from most evolutionists. But evolutionists don't pay any attention to these scientists. They don't like what they're saying. They would rather believe Johanson, you see. But I think that Lord Zuckerman, Dr. Oxnard, certainly have reached the correct conclusion. These creatures were apes. Now, that doesn't mean they were gorillas or chimpanzees or something like that, but they were apes, you see, and not intermediate whatsoever between apes and people. Now, the next suggested possible ancestor was the Java man and Peking man creature, the Homo erectus. There was a Dutch physician, Dr. Eugene Dubois, who's an evolutionist, and somehow he got the idea that man must have evolved down in the East Indies, Dutch East Indies, or in Asia, which is now Indonesia. And so he joined the Dutch army, asked for an assignment to the Dutch East Indies, and he was assigned to Sumatra. He spent 2 years searching for the missing link. Without any luck, was reassigned to Java, and within 1 year, she had found his missing link. And now we see the Java man. In the upper portion of the slide, we see the skull cap that Dr. Dubois found in 1890. 50 feet away, and a year later, he found the large leg bone, the femur. He claimed that all of these bones belonged to the same creature. Now, from the skull cap, you see it's very typical of the apes. Had no forehead, very flat, massive eyebrow ridges. Very typical of the ape. But the femur, the leg bone, is essentially the same as that of human. And so he said he had an ape walking erect. Finally, more and more evolutionists began to believe that this was really true. But Eugene Dubois himself changed his mind. And 15 years before he died, and up to the time of his death, he claimed that this creature had nothing to do with human evolution, human origin, but it was just a giant gibbon, a giant ape. Later, in 1922, one tooth was found in a limestone cliff near Peking, China. And they searched that cliff intensely, and eventually they found fragments of 40 different individuals. What they found, actually, were jaws, teeth, and skull. They did not find any leg bones or foot bones or ribs or anything of the postcranial skeleton. Furthermore, the skulls had been bashed in from the rear so the brains could be taken out and eaten. Now, evolutionists believe that these creatures were intermediate between ape and man. They believe that they were cannibal. They were both the hunter and the hunted. They either killed or ate their friends or their enemies or something like that. And there the remains are. And they have now put these creatures in the same species of Java man, in what they call Homo erectus. And it is generally accepted then that these creatures are intermediate. However, some others who have studied the evidence there, such as Marcelin Boule was a great French expert. He was an evolutionist. He studied those skulls. He studied the tools that are found on the site. And he concluded that those creatures were too ape-like to have made the tools found on the site. He asked the question then, who was the hunter? Who had killed and eaten these creatures? He said he believed that the evidence indicated that the hunter was true man, Homo sapiens, who had killed and ate those creatures. Well, then obviously they cannot be our ancestor. You can't have man eating his own ancestor. That wouldn't work out at all. Now, furthermore, I think supporting that idea, he actually agreed more or less with Eugene Dubois that these creatures were giant apes of some kind. I think supporting that with the fact that Dr. Louis Leakey, down in the Olduvai Gorge, where he is working in East Africa, in bed 2 of the Olduvai Gorge, he found the remains of Australopithecus and Homo erectus contemporary. Underneath, in bed 1, therefore older, in an older strata, he found the remains of a circular stone habitation hut, a product of man, something that is still manufactured in Africa today. Now, my questions are these. If you find Australopithecus and Homo erectus contemporary, how could one be the ancestor of the other? And if underneath, in an older strata, you find the products of humans, of Homo sapiens, how could either one of those creatures be the ancestors of man? I think Eugene Dubois was correct in his conclusion. These creatures are not intermediate. They weren't human, but they were giant apes of some kind or other. Certainly, there is no link between those creatures and Australopithecines or those creatures and man today. Whatever they were, they certainly were not transitional forms. Now, the next possible suggestion, of course, was the Neanderthal man, the Neanderthal creatures. Now, the fossils of the Neanderthal people were discovered about 1860, the first fossils discovered in 1860. And eventually fossils of these creatures were found in Europe and Asia and Africa and Israel and places like that. In 1908, a nearly complete skeleton of a male Neanderthal was discovered in France. And from the appearance of this creature, it looked like he couldn't quite walk upright. He sort of shuffled along with bent knees and kind of hunched over, and he seemed to have some eyebrow ridges and things like that. And so it was suggested that the Neanderthal people were very primitive, subhuman ancestors of man. And they, for nearly a century, the Neanderthal people was portrayed as these long-armed, knuckle-dragging, beetle-browed, stoop-shouldered, bow-legged, subhuman, Homo neanderthalensis. But eventually, additional fossils were found of these Neanderthal people that walked completely erect in the human manner. And it was finally concluded that that skeleton found in France in 1908 was an arthritic old man. The only reason he didn't walk upright, he had a bad case of arthritis. And when x-rays became available, they x-rayed the bones and teeth of these people, and they all suffered severely from rickets, a vitamin D deficiency which causes bones to become soft and deformed. They have now concluded that the Neanderthal people were fully human, Homo sapiens. Here we see the modern version of Neanderthal man from the American Museum of Natural History. About 35 years ago, a couple of scientists published an article about the Neanderthal people, and they said, now really, if you just take Neanderthal man, give him a shave and a haircut and a bath, put him in a business suit, place him on the New York subway, no one would take a second look. Well, that was 35 years or so ago. And of course, today you wouldn't have to give him a shave or a haircut, would you? In some circles in San Diego, where I come from, you wouldn't even have to give him a bath, and he'd fit in very nicely. But you see, he was not our subhuman ancestor. He was man. He was Homo sapiens, not our ancestors at all. And then we have the Cro-Magnon man. This is a reconstruction of Cro-Magnon man from the San Diego Museum of Man. And he is reported to have been quite similar to a modern European. So you see, these weren't our subhuman ancestors either. Well, we see that Rhomopithecus was not our ancestor. He was just an orangutan. We see that Neanderthal people were not our ancestors. They were humans, you see. What about some of these other creatures that have been suggested in the past? The Piltdown Man. Here we see a 1937 picture of Piltdown Man. At that time, he was very much alive as our ancestor. Fossils of this creature were found in England near Piltdown in 1912. They found some fragments of a jaw and fragments of a skull. Now, the jawbone appeared to be very ape-like, and yet the teeth were rather man-like. The skull was very human-like, but the bones appeared to be very old. As a matter of fact, they believed the bones to be about 500,000 years old. And so they put all the bones together in a single individual and maintained that he was our subhuman ancestor, the famous Piltdown Man. Well, in the 1950s, it was discovered that he was a fake, a fraud. Someone had taken a jawbone of a modern ape, a human skull, and treated them with chemicals to make them look old, and had altered the teeth to make them look manlike, planted the bones in the gravel pit, and fooled the world's greatest authorities. As a matter of fact, it's rather amazing how many human-like features they could see in that ape's jaw and how many ape-like features they could see in that human skull, because the skull was nothing but a modern human skull. The jawbone was a modern ape's jaw, you see, that had been altered and fooled the world's greatest expert. Why? Why could they be deceived by such a fraud? Because this is what they wanted to see. This is what they had expected to see. You know, we say, well, I'll believe it when I see it. Well, they see it when they believe it. You see, that was the case with these evolutionists. Now, in 1922, one tooth was discovered in western Nebraska. And it created a great deal of excitement among evolutionists at that time because they believed in that tooth they could see characteristics between ape and man. As a matter of fact, they couldn't quite decide whether this creature was an ape-like man or a man-like ape. In 1922, the Illustrated London News published a picture of this so-called Nebraska man based upon the descriptions of these scientists. We see that here in this picture. Here we see Nebraska man, we see his wife, we see the tools they were using based upon that one single tooth. Isn't science a fascinating subject? You get this wholesale production of conjectures from such a trifling investment of facts. Well, a few years later, they discovered some additional remains of this creature. He turned out to be neither an ape-like man or a man-like ape. He turned out to be a pig. That's right. It was nothing but a pig's tooth. I think we could say that this is the case where an evolutionist made a man out of a pig, and the pig made a monkey out of an evolutionist. But you see, Nebraska man was not our ancestor, just a pig's tooth. Piltdown man was not our ancestors, just a fake, a hoax, a combination of an ape's jaw and a human skull. Rhomopithecus was not our ancestor, he was just an orangutan. And we go on and on and on and on, you see. So I think we have to be very, very careful. When these people tell us something, you see, we have to evaluate the fact it's pure speculation based upon their preconceived ideas. What we find here, well, is what Lord Zuckerman described in a book that he published in 1970. The book was called Beyond the Ivory Tower. He had two chapters concerning the search for man's fossil ancestry. Lord Zuckerman said this. Now remember, he's a famous anatomist. He was an evolutionist. He'd done his homework. He studied. He searched for man's fossil ancestry for many years. Lord Zuckerman said this on page 64 of that book. He said that if we exclude the possibility of creation, then obviously man must have evolved from an ape-like creature. But if he did, there's absolutely no evidence for it in the fossil record. I would agree with this famous anatomist. If man has evolved, there is no evidence for it in the fossil record. Man is a special creation, just as apes are special creation, as are monkeys. They were separately and distinctly created, you see, and did not evolve from some lower creature. Finally, I'd like to close with a bit of humor, made possible courtesy of evolutionists. Now, ever since Darwin, evolutionists have told us that man has evolved from the ape-like creatures. And that's still what most evolutionists believe. But do you know that in the last few years, some evolutionists have suggested that just the reverse is true, that monkeys and apes have evolved from people? That's right. A friend of mine scratched his head, and I said, I'll be a monkey's uncle. Well, I guess we would be, wouldn't we? Well, now, I know you won't believe this, but this was such an astounding suggestion, I thought I better get a second opinion. So I went down to the San Diego Zoo, and I talked to this little orangutan. And I said, say, little fellow, would you believe it? Evolutionists are now telling us that you came from people. People that may have looked like me. Let's see what he thought about that. Well, you see, it's quite an astounding suggestion to him. His hair stood on end, his eyes popped out, and he said, no way. No way would I ever come from anything would look like you. Well, I agree. I don't believe that apes came from people, and I don't believe people came from apes. Some of my ancestors may have hung by the neck, but none of them ever hung by the tail. Thank you very much.